Merry Christmas! Here at Kansas Public Radio, we're celebrating the season with the ghosts of Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas yet to come. It's a KPR Christmas Carol, the holiday classic from Charles Dickens, abridged a bit and read by the KPR staff. Charles Dickens was already a well-established British author in the 1840s with novels like The Pickwick Papers, Oliver Twist, and The Old Curiosity Shop. A Christmas Carol was published in 1843 and became an instant bestseller and holiday favorite. It's been adapted to the stage and screen numerous times, with actors like Patrick Stewart, George C. Scott, and Michael Caine playing the role of the main character, Ebenezer Scrooge. Its full title is A Christmas Carol in Prose, Being a Ghost Story of Christmas. For the next hour, enjoy a KPR Christmas Carol featuring some of your favorite voices from Kansas Public Radio.
Marley was dead, to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I'm going to relate. Once upon a time, on Christmas Eve, old Ebenezer Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather. The city clocks had only just rung three, but it was quite dark already. The fog came pouring in at every chink and keyhole, and was so dense that the houses across the courtyard were mere phantoms. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open, so he might keep an eye upon his clerk, Bob Cratchit. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was so very much smaller that it looked like one coal. But he couldn't replenish it, for Scrooge kept the coal box in his own room. Ugh! Scrooge was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Hard and sharp as flint, secret and solitary as an oyster. The cold within him froze his old features. No warmth could warm, no wintry weather chill him. "A Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!" cried a cheerful voice. It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew, Fred.
"Bah!" said Scrooge. "Humbug!"
He had so heated himself with rapid walking in the fog and frost, this nephew of Scrooge's, that he was all in a glow. His face was ruddy and handsome, and his eyes sparkled.
"Christmas a humbug, Uncle?" said Fred. "You don't mean that, I'm sure." "I do," said Scrooge. "Merry Christmas! What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough."
"Come, then," returned the nephew gaily. "What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough." Scrooge, having no better answer ready on the spur of the moment, said, "Bah!" again, and followed it up with,
"Humbug!"
"Don't be cross, Uncle," said the nephew.
"What else can I be," returned the uncle, "when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas! Out upon Merry Christmas! What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older, but not an hour richer. If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled in his own pudding, buried with a stake of holly through his heart. He should."
"Uncle," pleaded the nephew.
"Nephew," returned the uncle sternly, "keep Christmas in your own way, and let me keep it in mine."
"Keep it," repeated Scrooge's nephew.
"But you don't keep it." "Let me leave it alone, then," said Scrooge. "Much good may it do you. Much good has it ever done you."
"There are things from which I might have derived good, by which I have not profited, I dare say," returned the nephew. "Christmas among the rest. But I am sure I have always thought of Christmas time, apart from its sacred name and origin, as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable time. It's the only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem to open their hearts freely, and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave, and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, although it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good, and will do me good, and I say God bless it."
Good afternoon, said Scrooge. With all my heart, I'm sorry to find you so resolute. A Merry Christmas, Uncle. Good afternoon, said Scrooge. And a Happy New Year. Good afternoon, said Scrooge.
At length the hour of shutting up the counting house arrived.
You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose, said Scrooge to his clerk,
Bob Cratchit.
If it's quite convenient, sir. It's not convenient, said Scrooge. It's a poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December, said Scrooge, buttoning his greatcoat to the chin. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier next morning.
The clerk promised that he would, and Scrooge walked out with a growl.
Oh, should we curse the winter for being e'er so long? When the trees are black and groaning, and every leaf is gone, and from the silent blackthorn bush there comes no small bird's song. Oh, should we curse the winter? Oh, should we curse the winter? Oh, should we curse the winter and December most of all?
Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern, and having read all the newspapers, went home. He lived in a gloomy suite of rooms that had once belonged to his deceased business partner, Jacob Marley. Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large. It is also a fact that Scrooge had seen it night and morning during his whole residence in that place, and that Scrooge had barely thought of Marley since his death 7 years ago. And then, let any man explain to me, if he can, how it happened that Scrooge saw not a knocker, but Marley's face. As Scrooge looked fixedly at this phenomenon, it was a knocker again. To say that Scrooge was not startled would be untrue, but he turned the key, lit his candle, and walked into his rooms. All was as it should be. Nobody under the table, nobody under the bed, nobody in the closet. Quite satisfied, he closed his door and locked himself in. Thus secured, he put on his dressing gown, his slippers, and his nightcap, and sat down before the fire. His glance happened to rest upon a bell, a long disused bell that hung in the room. It was with great astonishment and dread that Scrooge saw this bell begin to swing. It swung so softly at first that it scarcely made a sound, but soon it rang out loudly, and so did every bell in the house. It might have lasted half a minute or a minute, but it seemed an hour. As the bell ceased, they were succeeded by a clanking noise deep down below, as if someone were dragging a heavy chain. The noise grew louder and came closer, up the stairs, then straight through the door. It's Marley's ghost! Scrooge fell upon his knees and clasped his hands before his face. Mercy, he said. Dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me? It is required that the spirit of every man should walk among his fellow men and travel far and wide, said the ghost. If that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world and witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth and turned to happiness. The spectre raised a cry and shook its chain and wrung its shadowy hands. You are fettered, said Scrooge, trembling. Tell me why. I wear the chain I forged in life, replied the ghost. I made it link by link and yard by yard. Of my own free will I wore it. Do you know the weight and length of the coil you bear yourself? It is a ponderous chain, as full, heavy, and as long as this. Scrooge glanced about him on the floor, expecting to find himself surrounded by some 50 or 60 fathoms of iron cable, but he could see nothing. Old Jacob Marley, he said imploringly, speak comfort to me, Jacob. I have none to give, the ghost replied. But you were always a good man of business, Jacob, faltered Scrooge. Business, cried the ghost, wringing its hands. Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. It held up its chain at arm's length, as if that were the cause of all its unavailing grief, and flung it heavily upon the ground again. "Hear me," cried the ghost. "My time is nearly gone. I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate. You will be haunted by three spirits."
I think I'd rather not," said Scrooge.
"Without their visits," said the ghost, "you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow when the bell tolls one."
"Couldn't I take them all at once and have it over, Jacob?" hinted Scrooge.
"Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night at the stroke of 12. Look to see me no more, and remember what has passed between us."
Dong. "The hour itself," said Scrooge, triumphantly, "and nothing else." Light flashed in the room upon the instant, and the curtains of his bed were drawn, and it was a strange figure, like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man, viewed through some supernatural medium. Its long hair was white, as if with age, and yet the face had not a wrinkle in it, and the tenderest bloom was on the skin. But the strangest thing about it was that there sprung a bright light from the crown of its head, by which all of this was visible.
"Are you the spirit whose coming was foretold to me?" asked Scrooge.
"I am." The voice was soft and gentle.
"Who and what are you?"
Scrooge demanded. "I am the ghost of Christmas past."
"Long past?"
inquired Scrooge. "No, your past." It put out its strong hand as it spoke and clasped him gently by the arm. "Rise and walk with me." They passed through the wall and stood upon an open country road with fields on either hand. The city had entirely vanished. The darkness and the mist had vanished with it, for it was a clear, cold winter day with snow upon the ground.
"Well, good heaven," said Scrooge as he looked about him. "I was a boy here."
He was conscious of a thousand odors floating in the air, each one connected with a thousand thoughts, memories, hopes, joys, and cares, long, long forgotten. "Do you remember the way?" inquired the spirit.
"Remember it?" cried Scrooge with fervor. "I could walk it blindfold."
They walked along the road, Scrooge recognizing every gate and post and tree, until a little market town appeared in the distance. And there were some boys and great spirits who shouted to each other until the broad fields were so full of merry music that the crisp air laughed to hear it. "Now these are but shadows of the things that have been," said the ghost. "They have no consciousness of us." Scrooge knew and named every one of the boys. Why was he rejoiced to see them? Why did his cold eye glisten and his heart leap up as they went past? Why was he filled with gladness when he heard them give each other Merry Christmas? What was Merry Christmas to Scrooge? Out upon Merry Christmas, what good had it ever done to him? "The school is not quite deserted," said the ghost. "A solitary child, neglected by his friends, is left there still." Scrooge said he knew it, and he sobbed.
They left the school behind them and suddenly were in the busy streets of the city. The ghost stopped at a warehouse door and asked Scrooge if he knew it. "Know it," said Scrooge. "I apprenticed here." They went in. At sight of an old gentleman in a Welsh wig, Scrooge cried out in great excitement, "Why, it's old Fezziwig! Bless his heart!" Old Fezziwig laid down his pen and looked up at the clock. 7 o'clock. He rubbed his hands, adjusted his capacious waistcoat, laughed, and called out in a comfortable, rich, jovial voice, "Yo-ho there, Ebenezer, Dick!" Scrooge's former self, now a young man, came briskly in accompanied by his fellow apprentice. "Dick Wilkins, to be sure," said Scrooge to the ghost. "Bless me, yes, there he is." "Yo-ho, my boys," said Fezziwig. "No more work tonight. It's Christmas Eve. Clear away, my lads, and let's have lots of room here." Clear away. It was done in a minute. Every movable item was packed off, the lamps were trimmed, logs were heaped upon the fire, and the warehouse was as snug, warm, and bright a ballroom as you would desire to see upon a winter's night. In came a fiddler with a music book, climbed up on the lofty desk, and made an orchestra of it. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast, substantial smile. In came the three Miss Fezziwigs, beaming and lovable. In came the 6 young followers whose hearts they broke. In came all the young men and women employed in the business. In came the housemaid, the baker, the cook, and the milkman. In they all came, one after another, some shyly, some boldly, some gracefully, some awkwardly, some pushing, some pulling. In they all came, anyhow and everyhow. There were dances and more dances. There was cake. There was punch. There were mince pies and plenty of beer. But the great effect of the evening came when the fiddler struck up Sir Roger de Coverley. Then old Fezziwig stood up to dance with Mrs. Fezziwig. Top couple, too, with a good stiff piece of work cut out for them. More than 20 pair of partners, people who were not to be trifled with, people who would dance and had no notion of walking. When the clock struck 11, the ball broke up. Mr. and Mrs. Fezziwig took their stations, one on either side of the door, and shaking hands with every person as he or she went out, wished him or her a Merry Christmas. When everybody had retired but the two apprentices, they did the same to them. Thus the cheerful voices died away, and the lads were left to their beds, which were under a counter in the back of the shop. During the whole of this time, Scrooge had acted like a man out of his wits. His heart and soul were in the scene, and with his former self. He remembered everything, enjoyed everything, and underwent the strangest agitation. It was not until now that he remembered the ghost and became conscious that it was looking full upon him. "A small matter," said the ghost, "to make these silly folks so full of gratitude." "Small!" echoed Scrooge. The spirit signed to him to listen to the two apprentices, who were pouring out their hearts in praise of Fezziwig, and when he had done so, said, "Why, is it not? He has spent but a few pounds of your mortal money, 3 or 4, perhaps. Is that so much that he deserves this praise?" "It isn't that," said Scrooge, heated by the remark, and speaking like his former, not his latter self. "It isn't that, spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune." He felt the spirit's glance and stopped. "What is the matter?" asked the ghost. "Nothing particular," said Scrooge. "Something, I think," the ghost insisted. "No," said Scrooge, "no, I should like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now, that's all." "My time grows short," observed the spirit. Scrooge was overcome by an irresistible drowsiness, and suddenly, back in his own bedroom, he sank into a heavy sleep. Thank you.
Scrooge awoke at the stroke of one. A blaze of ruddy light seemed to be coming from the adjoining room. He got up softly and shuffled to the door. The moment Scrooge's hand was on the lock, a strange voice called him by his name and bade him enter. It was his own room, there was no doubt about that, but it had undergone a surprising transformation. The walls and ceiling were so hung with living green that it looked a perfect grove. Crisp leaves of holly, mistletoe, and ivy reflected back the light, and a mighty blaze roared in the fireplace. Heaped up on the floor were turkeys, geese, sausages, mince pies, plum puddings, oysters, chestnuts, apples, oranges, pears, and steaming bowls of punch. And there sat a jolly giant, glorious to see. "Come in," exclaimed the ghost. "Come in and know me better, man. I am the ghost of Christmas present," said the spirit. Scrooge entered timidly and hung his head before this spirit. "I am the ghost of Christmas present," said the spirit. "Look upon me." Scrooge reverently did so. It was clothed in one simple green robe bordered with white fur. Its feet were bare, and on its head it wore a holly wreath set here and there with shining icicles. Its dark brown curls were long and free, free as its genial face, its sparkling eye, its open hand, its cheery voice, and its joyful air. "Spirit," said Scrooge submissively, "conduct me where you will. I went forth last night on compulsion, and I learnt a lesson which is working now. Tonight, if you have something to teach me, let me profit by it. Touch my robe." Scrooge did as he was told and held it fast. Holly, mistletoe, ivy, oysters, pies, pudding, fruit, and punch all vanished instantly. So did the room, the fire, the ruddy glow, the hour of night, and they stood in the city streets on Christmas morning. The spirit led the way straight to the home of Scrooge's clerk. On the threshold, the spirit smiled and stopped to bless Bob Cratchit's dwelling with a sprinkling of his torch. Think of that! The ghost of Christmas present blessed his four-roomed house! Then up rose Mrs. Cratchit, dressed out but poorly in a twice-turned gown, but brave in ribbons, which are cheap and make a goodly show for sixpence. She prepared their Christmas feast with help from her daughters Belinda and Martha, Master Peter Cratchit, and the two young Cratchits. "Father's coming!" cried the children. In came Bob Cratchit, with his threadbare clothes darned up and brushed to look seasonable, and Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. Alas for Tiny Tim, he bore a little crutch, and had his limbs supported by an iron frame. The children ran to their father's arms, and then the two young Cratchits hustled Tiny Tim off into the wash-house, that he might hear the pudding singing in the copper. "And how did little Tim behave?" asked Mrs. Cratchit. "As good as gold and better," said Bob. "He told me coming home that he hoped the people saw him in the church because he was a cripple, and it might be pleasant to them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see."
Back came Tiny Tim, escorted by his brother and sister, to his stool before the fire. Bob turned up his cuffs, as if, poor fellow, they were capable of being made more shabby, and compounded some hot mixture in a jug with gin and lemons, and stirred it round and round and put it on the hob to simmer. Master Peter and the two little Cratchits went to fetch the goose, with which they soon returned in high procession. Such a bustle ensued that you might have thought a goose, the rarest of all birds, a feathered phenomenon, and in truth it was something very like it in that house. Mrs. Cratchit made the gravy, hissing hot. Master Peter mashed the potatoes with incredible vigor. Miss Belinda sweetened up the applesauce. Martha dusted the hot plates. Bob took Tiny Tim beside him in a tiny corner of the table. The two young Cratchits set chairs for everybody. At last, the dishes were set on, and grace was said. It was succeeded by a breathless pause as Mrs. Cratchit prepared to plunge the carving knife into the goose. When she did, and when the stuffing gushed forth, a murmur of delight arose all around the table. Even Tiny Tim beat on the table with the handle of his knife and feebly cried, "Hurrah!" There never was such a goose. Its tenderness, size, and flavor were the themes of universal admiration. Eked out by applesauce and mashed potatoes, it was a sufficient dinner for the whole family. Yet everyone had had enough, and the youngest Cratchits in particular were steeped in sage and onion to the eyebrows. And now Mrs. Cratchit left the room alone, too nervous to bear witness, to take the pudding up and bring it in. Suppose it should be not done enough. Suppose it should break apart. Suppose somebody should have got over the wall of the backyard and stolen it while they were merry with the goose. All sorts of horrors were supposed. Hello! A great deal of steam! The pudding was out of the copper. In half a minute, Mrs. Cratchit entered, flushed but smiling proudly, with the pudding. Like a speckled cannonball blazing in ignited brandy with a sprig of Christmas holly stuck into the top. Oh, a wonderful pudding! Bob Cratchit said he regarded it as the greatest success achieved by Mrs. Cratchit since their marriage. Mrs. Cratchit said that now the weight was off her mind, she would confess she had had her doubts about the quantity of flour. Everybody had something to say about it, but nobody said or thought it was a small pudding for a large family. Any Cratchit would have blushed to hint at such a thing.
At last the dinner was all done. The cloth was cleared, the hearth swept, and the fire made up, the compound in the jug being tasted and considered perfect. Apples and oranges were put on the table, and a shovel full of chestnuts on the fire. Then all the Cratchit family drew round the hearth, and at Bob Cratchit's elbow stood the family display of glassware, two tumblers, and a custard cup without a handle. These held the hot stuff from the jug, however, as well as golden goblets would have done, and Bob served it out with beaming looks while the chestnuts on the fire sputtered and cracked noisily. Then Bob proposed, "A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us," which all the family re-echoed. "God bless us, everyone," said Tiny Tim, the last of all. He sat very close to his father's side upon his little stool. Bob held his withered little hand in his, as if he loved the child, and wished to keep him by his side, and dreaded that he might be taken from him. "Spirit," said Scrooge, with an interest he had never felt before, "tell me if Tiny Tim will live." "I see a vacant seat," replied the ghost, "in the poor chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die." "Oh, no, kind spirit," said Scrooge. "Say he will be spared." "If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, none other of my race will find him here. What then? If he be like to die, he had better do it and decrease the surplus population." Scrooge hung his head and was overcome with penitence and grief. Bob Cratchit said, "Mr. Scrooge, a toast to Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast." "The founder of the feast, indeed," cried Mrs. Cratchit, reddening. "I wish I had him here. I'd give him a piece of my mind to feast upon, and I hope he'd have a good appetite for it." "My dear," Bob said, "the children, Christmas Day." "It should be Christmas Day, I am sure," she said, "on which one drinks the health of such an odious, stingy, unfeeling man as Mr. Scrooge. You know he is, Robert. No one knows it better than you do, poor fellow." Bob's mild answer was, "My dear, Christmas Day." "I'll drink his health for your sake and the day's," said Mrs. Cratchit, "not for his. Long life to him, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. He'll be very merry and very happy, I have no doubt." The Cratchits were not a handsome family. They were not well-dressed, but they were happy, grateful, pleased with one another, and contented with the time. And as they faded away, Scrooge had his eye upon them, and especially on Tiny Tim until the last. By this time, it was getting dark and snowing pretty heavily, and as Scrooge and the spirit went along the streets, the brightness of the roaring fires in kitchens, parlors, and all sorts of rooms was wonderful.
Here we come a-wassailing among the leaves so green. Here we come a-wandering so fairly to be seen. Now it's winter time, strangers travel far and near, and we wish you, send you a happy new year.
If you should happen to know a man more blessed in a laugh than Scrooge's nephew, all I can say is, I sure would like to know him too. While there is infection in disease and sorrow, there is nothing in the world so irresistibly contagious as laughter and good humor. When Scrooge's nephew laughed in this way, holding his sides and rolling his head, his wife and their assembled friends laughed out as heartily as he. He said that Christmas was a humbug, as I live. He believed it, too. More shame for him, Fred, said Fred's wife, Scrooge's niece, indignantly. He's a comical old fellow, and not so pleasant as he might be. However, his offenses carry their own punishment, and I have nothing to say against him. I'm sure he is very rich, hinted Scrooge's niece. What of it, my dear? His wealth is of no use to him. He doesn't do any good with it. He doesn't make himself comfortable with it. He hasn't the satisfaction of thinking that he's ever going to benefit us with it. I have no patience with him, observed Scrooge's niece. Her sisters and all the other ladies expressed the same opinion. Oh, I have, said Fred. I'm sorry for him, who suffers by his ill whims, himself always. Here he won't come and dine with us. What's the consequence? He doesn't lose much of a dinner. I think he loses a very good dinner, interrupted Scrooge's niece. Everyone else said the same, and they must have been competent judges, because they had just had dinner, and with the dessert upon the table, were clustered around the fire. After tea, they had some music, for they were a musical family. Scrooge's niece played well upon the harp and played, among other tunes, a simple little air. When this strain of music sounded, all the things that the ghost of Christmas past had shown Scrooge came upon his mind. He softened more and more. Scrooge thought that if he could have listened to it often, years ago, he might have cultivated the kindness of life for his own happiness with his own hands. But they didn't devote the whole evening to music. After a while, they played Blind Man's Bluff and a game called Yes and No, where Fred had to think of something and the rest must find out what. He only answered to their questions, yes or no. Scrooge's nephew was thinking of an animal, a live animal, rather a disagreeable animal, an animal that growled and grunted sometimes, and talked sometimes, and lived in London, and walked about the streets, and wasn't led by anyone, and didn't live in a menagerie, and was never killed in a market, and was not a horse, or a cow, or a bull, or a tiger, or a dog, or a pig, or a cat, or a bear. At every fresh question that was put to him, Fred burst into fresh roar of laughter. At last, one of the ladies cried out, I have found it. I know what it is, Fred. I know what it is. Well, what is it then? Cried Fred. It's your Uncle Scrooge! Which it certainly was. Admiration was the universal sentiment, though some objected that the reply to, Is it a bear? Ought to have been, Yes. He has given us plenty of merriment, I am sure, said Fred. And it would be ungrateful not to drink to his health. Here is a glass of mulled wine. I say, here's to you, Uncle Scrooge. Uncle Scrooge, they all cried. A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to the old man, wherever he is. Uncle Scrooge had become so light of heart that he would have thanked their company in an inaudible speech if the ghost had given him time. But the whole scene passed away, and he and the spirit were again upon their travels. It was a long night, if it were only one night. But Scrooge had his doubts of this, because the Christmas holidays appeared to be condensed into the space of time they passed together. It was strange, too, that while Scrooge remained unaltered in his outward form, the ghost grew older, clearly older. Its hair had turned to gray.
"Are spirits' lives so short?" asked Scrooge.
"My life upon this globe is very brief," replied the ghost. "It ends tonight."
"Tonight?"
cried Scrooge.
"Tonight at midnight. Hark, the time is drawing near."
You're listening to A KPR Christmas Carol, the holiday classic from Charles Dickens, abridged and read by the staff of Kansas Public Radio. Coming up, the ghost of Christmas yet to come. From the University of Kansas, we are Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 Lawrence and 99.5 Manhattan. Be sure to join us today for an encore broadcast of Festival of Nine Lessons and Carols from Cambridge, England. The King's College Choir performs in the traditional service of biblical readings and carols. Join us tonight at 7 o'clock here on Kansas Public Radio. And for a complete listing of all our holiday specials, check out our website, kansaspublicradio.org. Support for Kansas Public Radio comes from Stoneback Appliance, 9th and Iowa in Lawrence, locally owned and operated with over 50 years of sales and repairs. We've got your back at stonebackappliance.com. Welcome back to A KPR Christmas Carol, featuring the staff of Kansas Public Radio. As we left off, Ebenezer Scrooge had left the company of the Ghost of Christmas Present, and now the Ghost of Christmas yet to come.
The bell struck 12, as the last stroke of midnight ceased to vibrate. Scrooge beheld a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground towards him. The phantom slowly, gravely, silently approached. When it came near him, Scrooge bent down upon his knee, for in the very air through which the spirit moved, it seemed to scatter gloom and mystery. It was shrouded in a deep black garment, which concealed its head, its face, its form, and left nothing of it visible, save one outstretched hand. Its mysterious presence filled him with a solemn dread, for he knew no more, for the spirit neither spoke nor moved.
"I am in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come," said Scrooge.
The spirit answered not, but pointed onward with its hand.
"You are about to show me shadows of things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us," Scrooge pursued. "Is that so, Spirit?"
The upper portion of the garment was contracted for an instant in its folds, as if the spirit had inclined its head. That was the only answer he received. Although well used to ghostly company by this time, Scrooge feared the silent shape so much that his legs trembled beneath him, and he found that he could hardly stand when he prepared to follow it. The spirit paused for a moment, as observing his condition and giving him time to recover. But Scrooge was all the worse for this. It gave him a vague, uncertain horror to know that behind the dusky shroud, there were ghostly eyes intently fixed upon him, while Scrooge could see nothing but a spectral hand and one great heap of black.
"Ghost of the future," he exclaimed. "I fear you more than any specter I have seen. But as I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company, and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me?"
It gave him No reply. The hand was pointed straight before them.
"Lead on," said Scrooge. "The night is waning fast, and I know it is precious time to me. Lead on, spirit."
The phantom moved away. Scrooge followed in the shadows of its dress, which bore him up, he thought, and carried him along.
The ghost conducted him through several familiar streets, and as they went along, Scrooge looked here and there to find himself, but nowhere was he to be seen. They entered poor Bob Cratchit's house and found Mrs. Cratchit and the children seated round the fire. Quiet. Very quiet. The noisy little Cratchits were as still as statues, and Peter sat reading a book. The mother and her daughters were sewing, but surely they were very quiet. And he took a child and set him in the midst of them. Where had Scrooge heard those words? He had not dreamed them. The boy must have read them out as he and the spirit crossed the threshold. Why did he not go on? The mother laid down her sewing upon the table and put her hand up to her face. "The color hurts my eyes," she said. "The color? Ah, poor Tiny Tim. They're better now again. It makes them weak by candlelight, and I would show weak eyes to your father when he comes home for the world. It must be near his time." "Past it, rather," Peter answered, shutting up his book. "But I think he has walked a little slower these few last evenings." They were very quiet again. At last she said, and in a steady, cheerful voice that only faltered once, "I have known him to walk with. I have known him to walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder very fast indeed." "And so have I," cried Peter, "often." "And so have I," exclaimed another. "So had all." "But he was very light to carry," she resumed, intent upon her work, "and his father loved him so that it was no trouble. No trouble. And there is your father at the door." She hurried out to meet him, and his tea was ready for him on the hob. Then the two young Cratchits got upon his knee and laid each child a little cheek against his face, as if they said, "Don't mind it, Father, don't be grieved." Bob was very cheerful with them and spoke pleasantly to all the family. He looked at the work upon the table and praised the industry and speed of Mrs. Cratchit and the girls. They would be done long before Sunday, he said.
"Sunday? You went today, then, Robert?"
"Yes, my dear. I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. But you'll see it often. I promised him that I would walk there on a Sunday, my little child. My little child."
The city seemed to spring up about them. They were in the heart of it, amongst the merchants, hurrying up and down and chinking the money in their pockets. The spirit stopped beside one little knot of businessmen.
"I don't know much about it either way," said a large man with a monstrous chin. "I only know he's dead."
"When did he die?" inquired another.
"Last night, I believe."
"I thought he'd never die.
What's he done with his money? Asked a red-faced gentleman. I haven't heard, said the man with a large chin. Left it to his company, perhaps. He hasn't left it to me, that's all I know. It's likely to be a very cheap funeral. I don't know of anybody to go to it. I don't mind going, if lunch is provided, observed the red-faced gentleman with a laugh. Quiet and dark stood the phantom with its outstretched hand. Scrooge fancied from the turn of the hand that the unseen eyes were looking at him keenly. It made him shudder and feel very cold. Scrooge and the spirit left the busy scene and went into an obscure part of town. The streets were foul and narrow, the shops and houses wretched, and the whole quarter reeked with crime, filth, and misery. There was a low-browed beetling shop where iron, old rags, bottles, and bones were bought. Sitting among the wares was old Joe, a gray-haired rascal. Just then, a charwoman with a heavy bundle slunk into the shop, followed by a laundress similarly laden. She was closely followed by the undertaker in faded black. Surprised to see each other there, all three burst into a laugh. "What are the odds, Mrs. Dilbert?" said the charwoman. "Every person has a right to take care of themselves. He always did." "That's true indeed," said the laundress. "No man more so." "And who's the worse for the loss of a few things like these? Not a dead man, I suppose." "No, indeed," said Mrs. Dilbert, laughing. The undertaker produced his plunder first. It was not extensive. A seal or two, a pencil case, a pair of buttons, that's all. They were all examined and appraised by old Joe. Mrs. Dilbert was next. Sheets and towels, a few items of clothes, two silver teaspoons, a pair of sugar tongs, and a few boots. "And now my bundle, Joe," said the charwoman, dragging out a large, heavy roll of dark fabric. "What's this?" said old Joe. "Bed curtains?" "Bed curtains," returned the woman. "You don't mean to say you took 'em down, rings and all, with him lying there?" "Yes, I do. Why not?" "And his blankets?" "And his best shirt. They would have buried him in it, but I took it off again." "This is the end of it, you see," said the charwoman, as old Joe doled out their earnings. "He frightened everyone away from him when he was alive, to profit us when he was dead." "Spirit," Scrooge said, "this is a fearful place. In leaving it, I shall not leave its lesson, trust me. Let us go."
"Spectre," said Scrooge, "something informs me that our parting moment is at hand. I know it, but I know not how." The ghost of Christmas yet to come conveyed him to a churchyard. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one. Scrooge advanced towards it, trembling. "Before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point," said Scrooge, "answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they only shadows of things that may be?" Still, the ghost pointed downward to the grave by which it stood. "Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends to which, if persevered in, they must lead," said Scrooge. "But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me." The spirit was immovable as ever. Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and following the finger read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name, Ebenezer Scrooge. "Spirit, hear me," he cried. "I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I would have been but for this night. Why show me this if I am past all hope?" For the first time, the hand appeared to shake. "Good spirit," he pursued, as down upon the ground he fell before it, "I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone." Holding up his hands in a last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost.
yes, and the bedpost was his own, the bed was his own, the room was his own. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in.
I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven and Christmas time be praised. I say this on my knees, old Jacob, on my knees.
He was so flustered and so glowing with his good intentions that his broken voice would scarcely answer to the call.
"They are not torn down," cried Scrooge, folding one of his bed curtains in his arms. "They are here. I am here. The shadows of the things that would have been may be dispelled. They will be. I know they will."
His hands were busy with his garments all the time, turning them inside out, putting them on upside down, tearing them, mislaying them, making them parties to every kind of extravagance.
"I don't know what to do. I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy, as giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to all the world. Hallo! Hallo here!"
He had frisked into the living room and was now standing there perfectly winded.
"There's the door by which the ghost of Jacob Marley entered. There's the corner where the ghost of Christmas Present sat. It's all true. It all happened."
Really, for a man who'd been out of practice for so many years, it was a splendid laugh, a most illustrious laugh, the father of a long, long line of brilliant laughs.
"I don't know what month it is. I don't know how long I've been among the spirits. I don't know anything. Never mind. I don't care. Hallo! Woo! Hallo there!"
He was checked in his transports by the churches ringing out the lustiest peals he had ever heard. Clash, clang, hammer, ding, dong, bell. Oh, glorious, glorious! Running to the window, he opened it and put out his head. No fog, no mist, clear, bright, cold, golden sunlight, heavenly sky, sweet fresh air, merry bells. Oh, glorious, glorious!
"What's today?"
cried Scrooge, calling downward to a boy in Sunday clothes.
"Eh? What's today, my fine fellow?"
"Today? Why, it's Christmas Day."
"It's Christmas Day. I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. They can do anything they like. Of course they can. Of course they can. Hallo, my fine fellow."
"Hello.
Do you know the poultry shop in the next street, the one at the corner?"
"I should hope so."
"An intelligent boy, a remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey, the one that was hanging up there? Not the little turkey, the big turkey."
"The one as big as me?"
"Yes, my buck."
"It's hanging there now."
"Is it? Go, go and buy it, and tell them to bring it here, that I may give them the address to deliver it. Come back with the man, and I will give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes, and I'll give you half a crown."
The boy was off like a shot.
"I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's," whispered Scrooge, rubbing his hands and splitting with a laugh. "It's twice the size of Tiny Tim."
Scrooge went downstairs to wait at the door, ready for the coming of the poultry man. As he waited, the knocker on the door caught his eye.
"I shall love it as long as I live," cried Scrooge, patting it with his hand. "I scarcely ever looked at it before. It's a wonderful knocker. Here's the turkey. Hallo, hallo, Merry Christmas!"
And it was a turkey.
"Why, it's impossible to carry that to Bob Cratchit's. You must have a cab."
The chuckle with which he said this, and the chuckles with which he paid for the turkey, the cab, and the boy, were only to be exceeded by the chuckle with which he sat down breathless in his chair again and chuckled until he cried.
Scrooge dressed himself all in his best and at last got out into the streets. By this time, people were pouring forth. Scrooge regarded everyone with a delighted smile. He looked so irresistibly pleasant that three or four good-humored fellows said, "Good morning, sir. A Merry Christmas to you." And Scrooge said often afterwards that of all the cheerful sounds he had ever heard, those were the most cheerful in his ears. He went to church and walked about the streets and watched people hurrying to and fro. He patted children on the head and questioned beggars and looked down into the kitchens of houses and up to the windows and found that everything gave him pleasure. He had never dreamed that any walk, that anything, could give him so much happiness. In the afternoon, he turned his steps toward his nephew's house. Scrooge passed the door a dozen times before he had the courage to go up and knock, but he made a dash and did it. "Fred," said Scrooge. "Why, bless my soul," cried Fred. "Who's that?" "It's I, your Uncle Scrooge. I've come to dinner. Will you let me in, Fred?" "Let him in? It is a mercy he didn't shake his arm off." Nothing could be heartier. His niece looked just the same. So did all of their friends when they came. Wonderful party, wonderful games, wonderful happiness. Scrooge was early at the office next morning. Oh, he was early there. If he could only be there first and catch Bob Cratchit coming late. That was the thing he'd set his heart upon. The clock struck 9. No Bob. A quarter past. No Bob. He was full 18 minutes and a half behind his time. "Hello," growled Scrooge in his accustomed voice, as near as he could feign it. "What do you mean by coming here at this hour of day?"
"I'm very sorry, sir," said Bob. "I'm behind my time."
"Yes," repeated Scrooge. "Yes, I think you are. Step this way, sir, if you please."
"It's only once a year, sir," pleaded Bob. "It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir."
"Now, I'll tell you what," said Scrooge. "I am not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. And therefore," he continued, leaping from his stool, "and therefore I'm about to raise your salary." "A Merry Christmas, Bob," said Scrooge, with an earnestness that could not be mistaken, as he clapped him on the back. "A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family, and we will discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop, Bob. Make up the fires and buy another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit." Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all, and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. It was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us, and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
You've been listening to A KPR Christmas Carol, the holiday classic by Charles Dickens, abridged and read by the staff of Kansas Public Radio. In order of appearance, A KPR Christmas Carol featured
Daryl Brogdon,
Jeff Watson,
Cordelia Brown,
Bob McWilliams,
Laura Lorson,
Jason Sloat,
Stephen Coranda,
Jay, Season's Greetings, Schaefer,
Steve Kincaid,
Kay McIntyre,
David Bassey,
Michael Keelan,
Tom Parkinson,
Dan Skinner.
A KPR Christmas Carol has been a production of Kansas Public Radio at the University of Kansas. And from all of us at KPR,
God bless us, everyone.
Bah humbug.